Now, the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to the Monday edition of the Three Martini Lunch, along with Jim Garrity of National Review, who is also co-author of Heavy Lifting. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Good, bad, and crazy martinis for conservatives today. And Jim, at this point in the Republican presidential race, it's always happy to see the number of candidates dwindling, especially when it's still in the double figures. And I think we're down to 13 now, now that Lindsey Graham, the Republican senator from South Carolina, has announced he is getting out of the race. He says he has succeeded in his secondary goal of getting more people to realize what it's going to take to defeat ISIS, namely by sending more troops to Iraq and Syria. He says that when he started in the first debate, nobody else agreed with him in that. And now he says the majority of other GOP White House hopefuls do. He also said in the last debate, Jim, it was time for lower polling candidates to get out. And we said, well, you first. And apparently he listened. So way to go, Lindsey Graham.
It's easy to scoff at Lindsey Graham this morning. And I have pointing out that, you know, we're now look, everybody's wondering where is his 2% in South Carolina going to go to now? As much as we may enjoy that, and he may have it coming. Lindsey Graham, look, if nothing else, we know exactly where Lindsey Graham stands. You name the place, he wants to invade it. And he his campaign, as much as it may seem a little, you know, overdone, he knows what he cares about. He is concerned about the rise of ISIS. And there are a lot of candidates who weren't so focused on that who are now kind of scrambling and trying to play catch up. Lindsey Graham, if nothing else, is serious about this. We may not agree with his most frequent solutions, but he is a guy who's been paying attention to a real problem for a long time. As far as going on the stump and speaking goes, he's actually one of the more entertaining candidates out there. He's funny. He's seems to have a good attitude towards things. He joked that in his administration, there'd be a lot more drinking in Washington. There'd be a lot more effort to reach out across the aisle. Lindsey Graham is just not a bad man. He just seemed like a guy who was better suited to someday be Secretary of Defense than to be President of the United States, that this was clearly where his heart and soul were focused. And, you know, I think most conservatives say, well, you know, we kind of need a full spectrum conservative. We need somebody who's going to move the ball on all fronts. But, you know, we wish you well, Lindsey Graham. Obviously, he's got a pretty bright future ahead of him in South Carolina, not going anywhere anytime soon. And with his departure, we can now seriously consider getting rid of the kiddie table debates.
Yeah, that's true. It was already down to four. And I think we're getting closer and closer to that reality. Let's move to the bad martini now. And both the bad and the crazy come from an interview the president did just before leaving Washington for Christmas break with Steve Inskeep, the host of Morning Edition on NPR. They covered a number of different categories, but for the most part, the interview focused on the threat posed by ISIS. And the president, once again, very dispassionate in his tone, you might say, answering a question about why people need to keep in perspective the threat ISIS really poses.
It is also important for us to keep things in perspective. And this is not an organization that can destroy the United States. This is not a huge industrial power that can pose great risks to us institutionally or in a systematic way. But they can hurt us, and they can hurt our people and our families. And so I understand why people are worried.
He also said that the media has whipped up this story to some extent in the last month or so, ever since Paris. And he says we're definitely going to win as long as we remain who we are.
You know, Greg, destroying America is a really high bar. Let's say Soviet Union, Nazi Germany, Imperial Japan. And after that, it's a pretty steep drop off of who could even, you know, play that game. But here's the thing. The world is full of really terrible things that can happen that aren't the destruction of the United States of America. 9/11, right? 9/11 did not destroy the country, right? But it killed 3,000 people. It injured many more. It traumatized it. The economic consequences were intense and serious. You might argue that it traumatized the entire country, watching people die before their eyes. It was a severe psychological, emotional, morale blow to the country. And you might argue we're still dealing with the consequences and the fallout today. So no, Mr. Pre- you know, like he keeps playing. He keeps saying, oh, ISIS is not an existential threat to the United States. Well, there's a lot of threats that aren't existential. You know, you didn't die in the car accident, but you can still be maimed. All right. He keeps insisting, well, it's not the worst case scenario. Which sounds just a little bit like, you know, Chip Diller at the end of Animal House. He just always, the message from this president is always, it's not as bad as it looks. It's not so serious. Go back to your business, America. Calm down. I think back to that Sunday night speech a few weeks ago, Greg, and he always has this tone of like, we're this panicking children. And he's the, you know, the calm father who understands how it is and his perspective and stuff. And he's the guy who kept telling us right before San Bernardino, they had no intelligence, nothing pointing to a terror attack. He's the guy who was saying ISIS was contained before Paris. He's the guy who was calling ISIS the JV team. So which one of us is really wrong, Mr. President? Is it you or is it us? Because I'm pretty sure it's you. And, it's the breakup time, right? Mr. President, it's not us. It's you.
And, of course, he did make one admission. He said he has made one mistake, and that's that his administration has not spent more time telling the American people just how great the fight against ISIS is going. So if there's one thing the president needs to do more, it's to talk about how right he is.
One of the intriguing themes of this entire interview is, here we are. It's year seven. We're ending year seven of the Obama presidency. Certainly the situation with ISIS is the most dire circumstance facing the country, but you can look at a lot of other fronts. You know, economically, you can look at race relations and the viewpoint towards policing in this country. You can see the sudden spike in homicides. There's a lot of areas where things are not going well in this country. And Obama is really happy to do a victory lap. At this NPR interview, he really comes off this vibe of like, look, we're going to be thanking him someday. We have no idea how good we have it. We're just these spoiled children who don't appreciate just how what wonderful results he's brought to us.
But he wasn't done. As we shift to the crazy martini, he was also asked to give his thoughts as to why he thinks Donald Trump has done so well in the polls, both nationally and in some of the critical states, heading closer and closer to the actual voting in the 2016 primaries and caucuses. And the president talked about how thrilled he was that America was advancing as he sees it. And then he touched on what he believes is appealing to Trump supporters.
But I do think that when you combine that demographic change with all the economic stresses that people have been going through because of the financial crisis, because of technology, because of globalization, the fact that wages and incomes have been flatlining for some time, and that particularly blue-collar men have had a lot of trouble in this new economy where they're no longer getting the same bargain that they got when they were going to a factory and able to support their families on a single paycheck. You combine those things, and it means that there is going to be potential anger, frustration, fear.
So, Jim, I guess the bitter clingers are back here. And if your job is stagnant, it's your fault for being angry and fearful. And I guess given the demographic shifts, there's a race element here, too, apparently.
I was going to say, as I noticed in that, I mentioned in the morning jolt in the corner, Greg, do you notice how he just kind of, you know, casually mentions that wages have flatlined? Right. You know, and like, or there's one that only shows how great middle class economics is working and the economy is in recovery. And, you know, we things are going great. By the way, nobody's gotten a raise. But if, once you go beyond that, the economy is great. There's actually elements of President Obama's assessment there that I think are valid and accurate. Right. He keeps pointing, you know, when he says the country is full of anger and fear and anxiety. I don't think he's wrong. I just what I find fascinating about that exchange there, Greg, is that it's like he's president of some other country that's doing really great, looking at this other, you know, looking at the United States saying, boy, they have problems. You know, Mr. President, why do you think people are angry and fearful and full of anxiety? Why do you think there is this fertile ground for Donald Trump, who you totally disagree with? Why do you think he's succeeding? And if you look at the country and you see this mass of fear and anger and anxiety, you feel any responsibility for it? I mean, if this was year one of the Obama presidency and he was still getting started, okay, fine. But like, look, Mr. President, you're almost at the end of your term. You've done about 90% of what you're going to do. And this is where we are. And you've got to the point where you have the country turning to a guy who most people would have considered extreme a long time ago. And suddenly ideas like keeping all Muslims out is considered, you know, not an automatic dismissed idea because we have so little faith in the actual system of keeping out terrorists, to use one example. People are so mad about illegal immigration that they're willing to believe Donald Trump is going to persuade the Mexican government to build a wall for us. A lot of people think that's never going to happen, but people want to believe in it because they feel like the issue of illegal immigration has been utterly ignored for 7 years, and some would argue for, you know, 30-some years, maybe going back even further. the country's in this really bad state, and Obama's kind of lamenting this in this interview, without kind of acknowledging the fact that, gee, maybe it has something to do with the guy who's been president for the past 7 years. So that's why it kind of struck me as the crazy martini, is that all of a sudden it's like he's having this out-of-body experience and analyzing it without acknowledging the fact that, oh, by the way, you know, he's had a hand in how we got to where we are.
And the blue-collar men. It's the one demographic I think he's willing to...
They're looking at this alien species he's trying to... He's like Jane Goodall.
Oh, we'll leave it there for today. Jim, have a good one. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
See you tomorrow, Greg.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Thanks for being with us today. And be sure to tune in again on Tuesday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.